on to Picks with the Professor, the show where a real statistics professor usually gives you sports betting tips. Now, we're going to talk a little bit on betting, but we're going to mainly be focusing on the tournament as a whole. This is the 2024 NCAA Tournament Bracket Special. We're going to go through, I'm going to show you my bracket, every single pick. We're going to skip through and fly through a little bit more of the first round games and talk more about the hypotheticals as we go through here, talk about some interesting facts, just some bracket strategy. We hope it's a good show, an entertaining show for you. Jake, we're going to be covering every single NCAA tournament game on YouTube for our viewers. If you want the NIT and the CBI, that's where you want to join Dub Club. You'll also get the picks earlier. We're going to release the shows and all the picks. We've already released the picks for the first round to our people on Dub Club. So if you want the picks sooner, you want the shows sooner, you need to be with us on Dub Club. The QR code right there will get you $5 off your first pick. This will also be, again, where you get the NIT and the CBI. Otherwise, we will be giving out a ton of information on YouTube here as the tournament goes along. Jake, this is one of the most fun times of the year, even if you don't love college basketball. And I don't really love it because it can be maddening. This is so much fun this time of year.
Yeah, it's just incredible. It's something everybody and their brother and their wife and who's never seen basketball in the past 6 months is going to fill out a bracket and have just as good a chance as the people who've watched every second of it, and typically a better chance because it's just wild how it works out. It's just fun. It's a great time. It's the number one time to get a vasectomy, so you can just sit there and do nothing.
Yes. For Thursday, Friday games. Absolutely, yes. It's the highest, people schedule those for Wednesday at the tournament, I guess. And then, they're off Thursday, Friday.
You know what? If I was a doctor, you might offer fake ones so you can have the excuse from work and
every,
all that.
And every year, you could just come back and, it just didn't work. I got to go back and get one the next year, every year. This is back when I had a real job, a nine to five job, I guess I would say. This is more work than I've ever done in my life working on these models and these shows and everything. But I would always schedule vacation days for these first 2 days because it's a lot of fun. Jake, this will be a little bit of a different show. You're going to be driving the ship for this as we go through my bracket. You're going to kind of be the host, and I'm going to be kind of talking about what's going on. I've actually worked up the projections for a lot of the hypotheticals, so I'll be able to talk about that based off of what Sideline says. Again, that's the mathematical model that I've built to help us project what's going on here. Of note, one thing real quick before we get started, the NIT and CBI totals will be a lot higher than the NCAA tournament totals. The NCAA tournament, I'm using the same formulation that the conference tournaments used, which is dropping the point totals a little bit. The games are a little bit different. They're a little bit more controlled. The NIT, the CBI get a little bit more out of hand. The projection totals on that get a little bit higher. There's a little bit less defense played, a little bit more run and gun. It's just a different style of game. We see it every single year. So if you're curious, the projected totals have taken that into account. So that's something to keep note of. But Jake, before we get, you have some fun facts, some bracket strategy you want to talk about real quick. But before we get to that, of course, remember we are sponsored by BetUS. If you have not yet checked them out, do so today. You can get 125% bonus on your first three deposits if you're a new customer with them. As we always talk about, shopping around for the best price if you're betting on sports can be a massive difference maker. We always appreciate their support and ask that you check them out if you have not done so yet.
BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus, 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
Otherwise, Jake, I'll turn it over. You are now the host, so you're the captain now.
All right, look, first thing, right, are we going to get another 15 seed to make a run? Like, I mean, the last 3 years, we've had three take out a two seed with Princeton, who should have made the tournament this year and just dropped the ball. But then you had Princeton, St. Peter's, of course, and Oral Roberts with Max Asmus, who's now playing for Texas. Do you see that happening this year? Are we going to go 4-for-4?
So it's tough to say. Obviously, we always talk about with betting, right? We never know exactly what's going to happen. We predict the future. We talk about average games. If you talk about an average game, no, there's no average game where a 15 beats a 2. We have seen it more recently. Some people are wondering why, and this kind of should affect your bracket strategy a little bit. tournaments on the whole, and not all of them have done this, right? The SWAC and the MEAC are two that stand out to me as I believe they still do traditional 8-team start everybody in the corners, quarterfinals brackets. There's not a lot of tournaments to do that anymore. Over the years, many of them have gone to the double buys, the triple buys, or quadruple buys, and they're starting off with their better teams protected as they get later on, like already playing in the semis, right? We know the West Coast Conference does that. I believe maybe the Southland did that. Some of the smaller conferences are starting to do that because they don't necessarily want their six seeds in the tournament unless they really aren't it. They want their better teams in there. And so what you're seeing is you're seeing a stronger set of 14, 15, 16s in the tournament in these last few years than you would have 10 years ago. So 10 years ago, you would have seen more crazier upsets, more really weak teams as those 15 seeds. And so that made it really hard for them to win. But now the 15 seeds are a lot stronger than they've been in the past. That's why you're seeing that. That said, obviously, you know, I'm not going to pick any of the 15s to win. That's not, you know, probably the most likely thing to happen. Would they cover? That's a different question. We'll cover every single one of those games here later on in the week. But if you were to talk about one or two that could pull the upset, I mean, St. Peter's and Long Beach State both are ones you have to look at and consider, obviously. Long Beach State, a strong team. One we had as the play of the day to wrap up their conference a tournament at plus odds, yeah. Playing an Arizona team that, and I'll talk more about Arizona. I just don't trust them at all. I don't know what is up with them. They can beat anybody by 20 and they can lose to anybody by 20. They're obviously an upset alert. And of course, St. Peter's has the pedigree of doing it before. Now all those players and coaches are gone, but we at least know that they've done it before, kind of. That style of play, though, and playing a team like Tennessee. Tennessee's another team that you can't trust this time of year. Jake, I know you're a Tennessee fan, so you can opine on that if you will. But they're, you know, Tennessee's a team that's a great team, absolutely, but you know, and a great defense. But sometimes their offense just doesn't show up. It cost them in the first round of the SEC tournament, and you know, either one of those teams could make a run because they are so talented, but either one of those teams could lose on day one, and it really shouldn't surprise you. I don't know if you have any takes on their Tennessee since they're your team.
Look, like, besides the fact that Zakai Ziegler is playing his younger brother who plays for St. Peter's, like, I think the committee had a lot of fun with this little first round because you got that, and then you've got the possibility of Texas, Rick Barnes going to get the possibility of Rick Barnes going back and facing Texas. So, I mean, they had a lot of fun right here. Not to my enjoyment, but because I don't like the St. Peter's matchup. I think it's a tough game the way they play. They're still got a very good defense. Their offense slides behind, but Tennessee is vulnerable. But I mean, in my opinion, Marquette's the most vulnerable two seed, right? Like, if Kulik's not healthy, they can just shut down at random times. And Western Kentucky's got a decent defense, plays at a pace that
they play really
fast. Be tough. And I mean, I don't know, crazier things have happened. That would be my opinion for the weakest two seed. But
let me ask you real quick on Tennessee, since we're talking about him here. As a Tennessee fan, are you more afraid of a team like St. Peter's that's going to slow it down, grind it out, and kind of really take Tennessee back to last year's Tennessee team with their pace? Or are you more afraid of a team like Texas that's more up and down and over team, a team that's like very defense optional and wants to run and gun with you? Which type of style do you think poses more of a threat to Tennessee? Or is it just Tennessee's their own worst enemy and it doesn't really matter what style it is because they're either going to control the game or they're not. And it just depends on if they show up.
I think it's not so much either run or gun or slow it down. It's more how physical they can be. Because Tennessee prides itself on being physical. And it, in my opinion, Adu is weak with the ball, connect dribbles too high, and can get frustrated. So I think it runs into that. So like a team that can slow it down like St. Peter's doesn't scare me that much. It's like if you look at Texas A&M and Mississippi State and Kentucky, teams that got more physical with them and we're able to take the beating and do it. That's the teams that worry me for Tennessee. Like when it comes to the St. Peter's matchup, if it's slow, I'm fine with that because we've got Dalton Kinect and nobody else does. So that's a guy we can hand the ball. It's like Grant Williams from a couple of years ago. It's a guy who can throw the ball and it's going to get you a bucket. Gotcha. The Texas game would scare me with the speed and and the ability they have. Like Dylan Dessou when he was at Vanderbilt absolutely destroyed Tennessee a couple of times. That scares me. But other than that, I don't see too much of a problem there.
All right. All right. What was the, I know you had a few other fun facts to throw at me here.
Yeah. Like, so which of the eight play-in games, and I'm sure it's going to be a 16 seed, is making it to the second round? Because that's happened every year except for once since that's been existed.
Yeah. I think, and people are going to say this is a cop-out. I think either one of those, 10-seed play-in games has a really good shot at it. And the reason I say that is, number one, Colorado, I think, is the best of the four play-in teams. We love Colorado all season. They let us down at the very end against Oregon in the conference championship game, but they made a nice little run there. They've been playing really well down the stretch. They can be kind of hot and cold, of course, and you never really know what you're going to get with them, but they are a very, very good team. Boise coming from the Mountain West, the Mountain West being stronger this year. Maybe even more about Florida. Florida's a team that also, can beat up anybody. And we've seen them have some massive wins this season. They can kind of struggle against some of the mediocre teams. They're kind of all over the map as well.
Injury there too. They got, yeah. I think he broke his leg. I forget who it was, but that's big for that. That might be an easier walk into the second round.
Yeah, anything can happen in that game, and that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. And then in the other one, not that I'm that high on Virginia or Colorado State, it's more about Texas, and my father is a Texas alum, many of you know. I've seen enough of that team this year. Texas is the same sort of thing. They can kind of beat anybody. They can play with anybody. They also can lose to anybody. Like, it would not surprise me whatsoever if Texas loses in the first round by 12 points. It wouldn't surprise me at all, like you said, if they beat Tennessee. Like, they are also a very inconsistent team. And there's some of the 6 through 11 type teams that I would say are you kind of know what you're going to get. They're decent. They're going to lose to the better teams. They're going to beat up on the weaker teams. Texas and Florida as 2-7 seeds are not that way. They're teams that I think can make a run, or they could get embarrassed in the first weekend. So yeah, I think either one of those 10 seeds has a really good chance of advancing. And I think you made the point there that all every year but one, since they've done this, one of those teams has won a game. It wouldn't surprise me if either one of them, whoever comes out of those first four games in Dayton, of those 10 seeds pulls it off.
Yeah, and then like with the Sweet 16, we've had 11 seed make it in 7 of the past 9. And 5 of the last 12, we've had 2-11 seeds. And I know everybody always thinks about the 5-12 matchup, or that as that's the one you watch out for. But it seems to be here more recently that the 11-6 matchup is a bigger upset category. Where to go? Do you see any of the 11 seeds making a run?
I have 3 of the 11 seeds winning the first game. So stay tuned for that. We will talk a lot about the 11 seeds as we move forward, because I have 3 of them with the outright upset. But I have none of the 5 seeds getting beat in the first round either. So we'll see if that comes to fruition.
All right, let's get to it then.
All righty then. We're going to start off here in the East. And, I'm going chalk here to start off with. A couple of things I want to point out. First off, FAU Northwestern, on all of your 8-9 games, people, don't spend too much time worrying about it. Unless you're in a pool of, 300 people, that one point isn't going to matter. So don't stress. Whoever wins that game is losing to UConn almost assuredly. Auburn, I have as one of the best teams in the country. UConn, many people are already talking about, has a really tough draw. To play a 4-seed in Auburn, Auburn is the poor man's UConn from last year, I think. One of those teams that is really good, finishing the year strong. The fact that they have to play them in the Sweet 16 is crazy. San Diego State UAB, Jake, I'm going to mention this multiple times throughout the show. I hate the committee. I hate all the committees. All the committees are terrible. They all don't know how to do their jobs. But the most frustrating thing is when they consistently pair up the mid-majors against each other like this. I would have loved to have seen UAB take on a Power 5 school rather than a Mountain West school. But here we are. San Diego State's a pretty good team. I don't know. I don't really have this one's pretty boring first set of winners here, I feel like.
Yeah, the committee didn't give a lot of respect to the Mountain West with how they're seeded. And I think Auburn was misseeded. Yeah. I think they should have been a 3. I mean, they beat Kentucky once. They won the SEC, but yep. Kentucky somehow gets a higher seed. That shocked me. That was the first, like, I was like, man. But yeah, this was a very chalky. UConn seems to be a buzzsaw again, just running through people with Klingon and everybody. It's not fair. I don't really see a way that they're not making the Sweet 16.
Bottom half, picking Drake over Washington State, I have no idea. That's a coin toss game right there.
Yeah.
Illinois is strong. BYU, I mean, so far early on, again, we'll kind of cover a lot of these games here on the show and talk about the spreads and the totals and how to bet them. But early on, I don't really see too much crazy happening here. Iowa State's a really good team. I think it's pretty straightforward early on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the only one I would kind of flip is that Washington State, and that's not because I think the pick's wrong. I'm trying to score some cheap points, and when I'm in these things, and I think less people have watched Washington State and know that they're a decent team, and more has been made about Drake beating Indiana State. So I think people are going to want to pick that upset. So I'm going to try to score a cheap point. I kind of do the same thing with 8-9 matchups, just try to see who I think is the more popular team and kind of pick the opposite. Because 1 point's not going to hurt me, but if I can gain it, I like it.
Yeah, it's not a crazy strategy. A lot depends, too, on how many people are in your pool. If you're in a pool with 12 people, you probably want to go a little chalkier than if you're in a pool with 112 people. You might want to try to be a little more creative. So it all depends there. You know, we have our own bracket challenge up right now, viewer. So if you were 15 minutes in, I probably should have said this earlier. You can find it on ESPN and their tourney challenge. You can search Picks with the Professor. Password is all lowercase professor. You can get in for that. Winner will receive 1 month free of Dub Club. So it doesn't matter if you're with us on Dub Club or not already, you'll get a free month. If you're not with us, you can join us over there. And if you are, we'll extend your subscription by a month for winning that. So we'll see how many people end up there. And that'll also kind of tell you your strategy. If there are, you know, more people or not, you want to get a little bit crazier. Drake Washington State's an interesting one. You kind of mentioned people are talking about Drake, and I kind of had that thought with a different matchup that we'll get to here later on the, it'll be real interesting to see how the picks shake out for people, because when you have one team that's like the real buzz, everyone knows them, and the other team that's not, I think that's an interesting discussion point. Being out west with Washington State, many people probably haven't seen. They're a solid team, but we will definitely break down that game more in depth, you know, come later in the week when we break down every game. To the south region, I'm not going to pick any of the 16 seeds, so we don't talk about those. Nebraska, A&M. I mean, I think this Nebraska team is pretty solid. Going chalk here early on, I like this James Madison team. I don't think they're that bad. I think they've got a decent chance to pull off the upset. The thing is, this Wisconsin team, you know, early on in the season, there were times when they looked shaky, then they looked strong, then they looked shaky again, and they finished strong. So I don't really know what to make of them. But if they play like they did in that Big Ten tournament, they should be able to handle a team like James Madison. But that's definitely one that you have to circle as a potential 12-5 upset. Jake, what are your thoughts here on this little quad?
Man, Nebraska scares me, because when they're hot, like you saw against Indiana, when the Tominaga, I don't exactly know how to say his name, he was shooting and not even watching the ball, because the rim was 50 foot wide for him. It didn't matter. And they can absolutely take teams out. They beat Purdue. They beat a handful of teams. But then they've also been absolutely massacred by teams they shouldn't be, because those threes aren't going. So it'll be very interesting with the Texas A&M. Kentucky's a bit better than Nebraska, but it feels like the same kind of matchup. So, I mean, you've seen how those games gone with Texas A&M. Wisconsin might be the upset pick. Like, I think everybody's going to circle James Madison, because they opened the year on national TV and beat Michigan State, and then proceeded to win a few more, then struggled for a bit. And they're a good team, a solid team. It's not a bad pick if you're going there. But I think more people are going to pick James Madison than Wisconsin. So he may score some cheap points there. And then a 13 seed I kind of like is Vermont. Mm-hmm. I know, as a Duke fan, that they just scare me. Duke is not playing well. They seem to be very mentally weak at the moment. And Vermont, Becker is a great coach. He'll have them ready to go. Getting to play Duke has got to be a dream. To be on national TV and upset them in the first round would be huge. You know, they're going to get the best shot Vermont has. That might be one I would flip, but other than that, it's very – first round typically is very chalky. Everybody remembers the upsets because they're crazy and fun, and those are the ones to watch, but 9 times out of 10 it's going pretty chalky in most of the matchups.
And we have to remember here too, we talk a lot about probability on this show, right? When we're looking at these matchups. And again, if you're with us in Dub Club, you get all the probabilities. But a lot of these teams we're picking are 60, 65%, 70% probability, when obviously like Houston in the first round's like 100% with rounding error, basically. It's 99 point something, you know, in a game like that. But a lot of these are, you know, 60, 65%, which means in theory, if you take three 65% games, one of them is going to be the upset. You just don't know which one it is. So a lot of times when I'm picking a bracket here, unless I really like something or it's really coin tossy, you know, I'm going to pick the 65% team and just kind of say, hey, on average, this is going to be a smarter pick that's going to get me more points. But obviously, we understand the possibility of an upset exists, especially like you said, Wisconsin. I think it's going to be a very trendy one, especially when you consider the weakness of the Big Ten. It's a conference that notoriously has taken a beating in the tournament. They typically get way too many teams in. They typically really underperform and struggle. I know there's a lot of Big Ten basketball fans out there, but it's just kind of the way it is. And obviously, you have the extreme case with Purdue last year losing in the first round. But it seems like every year they tend to struggle in the tournament. And this year's a particularly weak year, I think, for the Big Ten. So if they struggled here in the tournament, it wouldn't surprise me. On the other hand, we have to remember, in any set of six games, seven games, anything can happen. So if the Big Ten goes 7-1, or I don't even know how many teams they have in the tournament, I've counted, you know, in the first round, or 1-7, whatever it may be, anything can happen in these matchups. So that doesn't necessarily prove anything or mean anything. It just means that it is something to keep an eye on here with regards to these Big Ten teams. I have two of them winning here, even though I don't think it's a very strong conference. I just think this Nebraska team has been one that's been good to us personally. So I'm trying to reward them. And Cousin Jared, the big Texas A&M fan and alum, has already made the comment that they would make a run in the SEC tournament losing the first round. So I'm just trying to fulfill his dreams with that one.
Dreams?
Yeah. So the bottom half of the bracket, this is where things get a little bit fun here. I've got NC State over Tech in the first round. I like the way this NC State team's playing. They've obviously got the big man who is a matchup nightmare, and one that, you know, him and Lampton for Colorado are really the only two that I can think of like them in the country. Obviously, Edie's his own beast as well, but there's just not many people who are this sort of physical specimen. Tech's been a team that's, I just haven't been that impressed with. The Big 12 is very deep and very strong, but for the most part, I feel like they can be beaten by a lot of teams. They're good, not great. I think this is a coin toss game. Got it about 50-50 here. If you watch us on show later on, we might like NC State getting some big plus odds there in that one, just because the coin toss nature of it. So we're going to pick an 11 over a 6 there. And then whoever wins Boise, Colorado would be Florida. I really wish we could pick this after we knew who wins that game, just because Colorado is a team we've loved all season.
I don't think the picks lock till
they probably don't. I'm just about the show for the show. We're recording here on Monday, so and of course you talked about Western Kentucky, but I don't think they will be able to beat Marquette.
No, they're not going to. Knock on wood, right? But like it's I just think they're weak. With the weakest two, that doesn't mean they're. I think it's going to happen. Yeah, Florida with that injury is a big loss. I think Kentucky's primed for an upset too. They're kind of get a little jump shot dependent. I don't think Oakland's the team to do it. I think they got a gift of a matchup there. But yeah. And then NC State, DJ Burns, man, that guy was putting on a clinic last night, Saturday night, and he was just everywhere all the time. And if he's in shape enough to play the full game, I don't know what Texas Tech's going to do with him, but that's a fun matchup. That's one of the games I've got my eyes on that I'm like is going to be the sound on the TV kind of game.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. Kentucky is a team. And there's just so many of them, it seems like, this year that, you know, we've got the three strongest teams in college basketball. We've talked about all season. We've consistently had UConn, Purdue, and Houston as the top three. And we've had UConn number one for quite a while now in sideline. And when you get beyond that, there's a lot of teams like Kentucky that you can see dominating and making a run of the Final Four, and it wouldn't shock anybody. And yet you've seen them completely lay eggs, and you could see them losing in the first weekend, and it wouldn't surprise anybody either. So there's a lot of teams that are going to be really tough to peg as we move along. So that'll be one of the interesting teams to keep an eye on as we progress, especially if you're in a survivor tournament. People, if you know what a survivor tournament is, if you can find one, they are a lot of fun. You basically just pick a team to win every day. You can only pick a team once, And then when they lose you out, it's just like with a football survivor pool. And they can be a lot of fun because then you get to see the matchups as they progress later on. And so you could take a team like Kentucky in the first round, be a great survivor pick, I think, on day one, just to kind of say, like, yeah, you said, Oakland's an easier matchup for them. But I wouldn't trust them once you get past the first day. I personally enjoy the survivor pools a lot more than the bracket challenges. If you can find one, I highly recommend them. To the West, North Carolina, who got the one by default because of the fact that Arizona and Tennessee struggled the way they did. Michigan State, Mississippi State, zero clue what's going to happen in that game. Both of those teams look good at times and look shaky at times. Again, I wouldn't stress too much over the 8-9 matchup. I really like the St. Mary's team, and yet again, I hate the committee for matching with Grand Canyon. We've loved Grand Canyon all year. I love Grand Canyon. If they were a 12 seed playing a different five, I would 100% pick them to pull the upset. I just really like the St. Mary's team as well. I hate that that's a matchup in the first round. I think whoever wins that game has a really good chance to beat Alabama. If Alabama can beat Charleston, and Alabama's another team that you just can't trust. You have no idea that they're either going to look great, they can make a run of the Final Four, they could lose the first round, and it wouldn't surprise me. Jake, you as an SEC fan know all too well about the teams like Kentucky and Alabama, and Tennessee is another one that can absolutely make a run and can absolutely fall flat on their face.
Yeah, that's going to be the whole almost any SEC team you see out here, because Mississippi State is one of them that when they're playing well, they play well, and Tolu Smith is very, very good. They've got Hubbard, who should have won SEC Freshman of the Year. I know Reed Sheppard is a great player going to the NBA next year and all that. But his stats, because he came off the bench on a loaded team, were not as good as Hubbard. Hubbard led Mississippi State. That was a misfire of an award. But that's beside the point. North Carolina just didn't lose fast enough to get this one seed. I think so. How we're going to go with it. I mean, I really kind of like Charleston to win against Alabama. Alabama is playing very bad right now. They really struggling all sorts of ways. Nothing. They're not shooting well. They're not playing good defense. There's a lot of rumors that Oates was going to go somewhere else, that he gets the big money, and then they drop the game right away. I don't know. I'm not a fan of this Alabama team. I think Charleston is a very good team, very experienced team. We're in the tournament last year. I believe they won a game last year. I can't totally remember. But they are very good.
Yeah, Charleston, I believe, is a team that kind of can live by the three and die by the three at times with their style. Is that correct still?
Yes.
And that's going to make for an interesting matchup against an Alabama team that can live by the three and die by the three, get up and down the court, of course, in a way that almost no other team in the country can. But if Charleston's hitting from three, they've got a real chance to win that game, given that Alabama is such a defense optional team. I believe it was last year Alabama's defense was top 10 in the country, and we were playing a lot of the unders in Alabama games because the books kept painting really high numbers, and we found that any team that had any desire to slow it down, you could go way under with Alabama, and it worked great because they actually played defense last year. But other than last year, when you look back to the previous years before that and this year, defense has been completely optional in Nate Oates' Alabama teams, and it's kind of sometimes been their downfall. It could be here. I don't think you're crazy to think that Charleston's got a shot to win. Either one of those 12-13s could absolutely win those games. It would not surprise me in the least.
I absolutely hate that it's St. Mary's Grand Canyon. I was hoping Grand Canyon would go with Wisconsin, kind of thing like that, because then I would have been all over Grand Canyon, because Grand Canyon has the talent to be a power six, power five, however you want to look at a team. And so does St. Mary's. And now we got to see them go against each other and eliminate it. That's not fun.
Yeah, my hypothesis on this, I don't know if I'm right, but my hypothesis is the committee tends to do this every single year simply because if they were more consistently to match up across Power 5 to the mid-majors, more matchups, and one type of team, whether it was the mid-majors, the Power 5s, would consistently win, they would then have to kind of give more preference to them going forward, and they like to be able to just hide behind this, well, we don't know, type thing. And so if you're constantly matching, but it's the same thing that the football committee did back many years ago when I believe it was like TCU and Boise State ended up playing in the Fiesta Bowl, and it was like we wanted to see them play other teams and see if they could each win or each lose. And by pairing them up, you know, you kind of get to hide behind a cloak of uncertainty with that one. And the bottom half of the
it also guarantees there's at least one mid-major in the next round.
Yeah. So. Bottom half, I'm going two more upsets here. I'm going to go a slight upset, Nevada over Dayton. Very, very small upset, if anything. Not even sure. It's really a coin toss game. I probably shouldn't call it an upset. It's a seed upset. I'm not sure anybody would be surprised. The New Mexico over Clemson. I like this New Mexico team. I think they're pretty good. I think it's another coin toss game there for the 11-6s. Colgate is a team that could absolutely beat Baylor. I would not be surprised as a Baylor fan. They sometimes just struggle to show up in that game. I have a real interesting, we'll have a real interesting good breakdown of them, of that game, and a good pick that we like for it coming up here, you know, shortly. But with regards to just picking the bracket, I'm going to pick Baylor hesitantly because they're the more talented team. But Colgate, I mean, this is one that could get real wonky the bottom half. You could end up with 11, 14, 10, 15, and I wouldn't be that surprised because any of those double-digit seeds could win. Arizona, we talked about them earlier, can make a run of the Final Four or not show up. I have no idea. Long Beach State is not bad. Just a lot of talent here in the bottom half of this bracket, and maybe a weak six seed in Clemson, another team that lives by the three and dies by the three, and that can make a run or they could fall flat on their face in the first round. So this is a quadrant here that I feel like has a lot of uncertainty and could have a lot of red X's on people's brackets.
Yeah, this quadrant is tough because Clemson, if they get hot, just like we talked about with Nebraska, could absolutely make a run like we saw at the beginning of the year when they were getting ranked and everybody thought, oh, Clemson's going to run away with the ACC. And then they got cold and got swamped. New Mexico is a very good team. The Mountain West was very disrespected. You're seeing 11-10 play-in games like their last four and last first, like last four out kind of deal. Like it's, I think the committee really screwed up there, and I think you're going to get a few Mountain West teams in this Sweet 16. I really like this New Mexico team. Nevada is also one I like as well. They're very, both teams have very, very solid guards, play good defense, have a solid offense. But you don't believe in the fired coach magic there at Long Beach State? They say, hey, buddy, you're not going to coach here anymore. He's like, oh, let me coach the conference tournament. Here they are.
That is one of the wildest things I've ever seen. I don't remember seeing that before. Usually, you might get a bump for a game like that, but then to go out and win the conference tournament, to make the NCAA tournament after they've already announced you're being fired is, I can't remember anything quite like it. It's pretty.
I mean, he'd been there for like 20 years too, right? Like it's not like he's struggled a lot the last couple of years. They're like, oh, we got to move on. He'd been there for a long time. And that's a fun story. I'm sure they will talk about that ad nauseum. That game will probably get out of hand. It's going to be, and I'm already getting tired of the Jalen House crowd shots because the Suns playing for New Mexico. Like there's certain things that like they're low hanging fruit for announcers to talk about, and it's going to drive me nuts.
New Mexico sideline has them ranked number 20 in the country, and that doesn't necessarily mean they should be a five seed, right? We talked about this last year that UConn we had as one of the top four teams in the country entering the tournament last year, but we were very understanding of why they weren't a one seed, because saying their predictive ranking, which is what sideline is about a forward facing, how good is this team now considering injuries as well, which thankfully there's not a ton of them right now. Kansas has a couple guys questionable, Colex questionable for Marquette, but there's not a ton out there, thankfully. But that's a very different thing than the resume of a team, right? And obviously New Mexico's resume, they took a beating there, and I think they finished like sixth in the Mountain West, and that's obviously not great. But talent-wise, I think they're the best team in the Mountain West. It's just they didn't play great for part of the season. They had some injuries and that sort of thing. And so those are opportunities to look at when you're making your bracket, is ignore the seed, because the seed is about the resume. And honestly, you talk about a team like Clemson, and they were fantastically hot, but we knew at the time it would not last because they were shooting an ungodly number from three that wasn't going to be able to continue, right? What they did in November and December, it's not to say it doesn't matter. It's that you have to look and say, does it matter? Is it the same team? Are they doing the same thing? And a great win from November and December might mean a lot because it might tell you how they can perform earlier. I'm not picking James Madison. I don't think it's a crazy pick, but James Madison's a great example of a team that what they did in the non-conference, I think is absolutely relevant because it's mostly the same team, the same style. There's nothing crazy about it. What Clemson did in the non-conference, I'm not sure that's really relevant because it's going to be really hard for them to hit that well from three. It's only relevant in the sense of you know what their ceiling is. Like we said, they can make a deep run, but you have to consider the rest of the season and they can fall flat on the face. New Mexico, I'm not sure it's overly relevant. Some of their resume stuff that made them an 11 seed, and what's more relevant is just the fact they're a really talented team, and you saw that in the conference tournament. So it's kind of a balancing act of how do you view the full season, and that's where sometimes you just want to throw the seed out there and just say, who is this team today? And in this case, I've actually got New Mexico as the better team. And that one said that's got New Mexico at a 58% chance to win. So what we have is what should be an 11 seed winning. And in fact, the books have New Mexico as a slight favorite as well. So a situation where I'm not going to say they were misseeded necessarily. Maybe New Mexico should have been a 9 or whatever. But Clemson's resume is stronger than New Mexico's. But that doesn't mean that Clemson's the better team today. So just things to consider as you're filling out your bracket.
Do you consider time slot at all when you're doing these, like Baylor playing at 12:40, going against the East Coast team? I think we've got Creighton at 1:30 playing against, I guess, an Eastern time zone team. Like even Arizona playing at 2:00, but I mean, they're not playing an East Coast team, so it's not as big of a deal. But do you ever consider that as part of it?
Only in the totals aspect, we'll tend to see a few more unders earlier in the day as it's a little bit harder for teams to get going. Otherwise, I don't really consider that here in picking this or making bets. Because for the most part, the travel's there. It's mostly taken care of. The teams get there at the same time. It's not quite like – I remember there was a situation last year where we had a pick in the regular season when – someone like Sacramento State, it wasn't them, but it was someone like from California traveled, like they played like at home on Wednesday and then they played at like New Hampshire.
I think it was California.
It was someone from California and they played like at like New Hampshire. I don't think it was New Hampshire exactly, but it was someone like way out there or Dartmouth or somebody like that. And then it was like on a Saturday morning, you know, 10 a.m. body clock time or 9 a.m. body clock time or something like that. And then to fly back home right afterwards, it was like, that was a terrible spot for him. You tend to not see that as much in the tournament here. So I don't think it's as big of a deal. I do think it's a consideration for totals though, which we'll obviously talk about in our game by game breakdown. We pick a lot of totals for these games. Flipping over to the Midwest now, Purdue, obviously not going to pick a 16. Doesn't mean it won't happen. Obviously, last year it did. I do think this Purdue team is built a little bit stronger. They really fixed their big weakness from last year, actually having a couple guys who can shoot threes, which will be very helpful for them. When last year, they just did not have anybody who felt confident even shooting the ball, and that was their downfall. Utah State, TCU, literally, again, these 8-9s, don't waste your time thinking too hard about them. They're toss-up games, and unless you really think one of them can beat a one seed, I don't think either one of those teams is going to match up very well with Purdue. Another thing I hate the committee, I hate them for matching up Gonzaga and McNeese. We've loved this McNeese team as well. We've talked all season long about how they're a really good team. Earlier on in the season, I had them ranked inside the top 100 according to Sideline. Now they're, I think, like number 60 or something like that. This is a really good McNeese team. I hate that they're going against a Gonzaga team that's looked pretty strong down the stretch. And Kansas, we have no idea about the status of their two best players. We talked all season long about the lack of depth that Kansas has. Their sixth best player is below average, according to Simon, below college basketball average, which is insane for a team like Kansas. Those two guys don't play. They're in real trouble against Samford. It sounds like one of them is more likely to come back. The other one's more up in the air, but those two players, McCullough and the guy from Michigan, I just forgot his name.
Dickinson.
Two really good players. And if both of them are healthy, Kansas can absolutely make a run. If not, though, they might be in trouble early on. And you saw them with that early exit in the Big 12 tournament, not even competing against a pretty weak Cincinnati team. So you've got another potential 4 or 5 set of teams that could be upset here. I'm not picking it, but it wouldn't surprise me. Definitely might want to wait a little bit on that Kansas pick since brackets don't lock until the first game of the tournament. That's also a Thursday game as well. It's Thursday night game. But hearing the whatever injury update we might get on those two guys will make a huge difference in how we view Kansas.
Oh yeah, for sure. And like Samford is not a team to screw around with either. It's not like a 13 seed that you could maybe get by if not at full strength or playing limited minutes. That's a good team to go against. And McNeese State, like Will Wade personal issues aside, is a great basketball coach. He is very good. He took this team who I think won like 5 games last year and is like now 30 wins or something. Like in the 2 years, he's got them turned around and totally different. If I'm Gonzaga, I'm not excited to see them whatsoever. Mm. That is going to be tough. I mean, you've got Purdue game planning for Purdue is easy. It's hard to execute though, right?
Right.
You've got to get Edie moving around. You can't let him dominate you, and you got to hope Fletcher Lawyer at least two of Lawyer, Jones and Smith are having an off shooting night. And you got to kind of chase them off the 3-point arc. Now, can any of these teams like TCU, Utah State, Montana State, or Grambling State do it? I doubt it, because that is a big ask to do. But either way, this little set of four, I think between Gonzaga and Kansas, you're going to get a lot of chaos there. I don't know if both are going to get upset or either, but I think those are going to be tough games. So they're fun to watch. And I think it's 9:55. Is that the last tip?
It might be. It's pretty late. Yeah.
Which would be absolutely fun to watch to end your night with that Samford Kansas game. If Kansas is minus one of the two guys like Dickinson or McCullough, that could be absolutely fun and be tight at the end.
Yeah. McNeese won 11 games each of their last two seasons. They won 10 combined conference games their last two seasons, and they've exceeded all of those numbers here in this one season alone. So, yeah, what a heck of a turnaround for them. But then wrapping up the first round, I'm going to pick Oregon over South Carolina, another game that Sideline thinks is a pretty well toss-up, as do the sports books, as Oregon is either a slight favorite or it's a pick 'em. So, again, I'm not saying that the committee messed up with their seeding, because resume is very different than how good you actually are, but Sideline thinks that Oregon's the better team, gives them a 58% chance to win, so I'm going to pick Oregon there. Creighton Akron, I'm high on this Creighton team, and I'm really low on Akron. I don't think Akron is really a good 14 seed. I think there might be I think Akron might be getting a little bit of respect there because the conference they're coming from, but this was one of the really down years of the MAC. The MAC in the last several years has seemingly had a couple of teams at the top that have been really good, scary come March, can make a run, can high-flying, can make threes, that sort of thing. And this Akron team isn't bad by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't think they're quite as strong as some of the MACs. I think the committee seeded them based off the historical reputation of the MAC. I don't think they're going to give Creighton really any fits. We talked about this bottom quadrant at the start of the show here. I'm going to pick Texas just because they're the better team, but they are definitely a team you cannot trust whatsoever. I don't think you can trust Tennessee either. So a couple teams at the bottom there that could be upsets galore. And I think as we go forward, I think you'll kind of see my strategy play out with building this bracket. It's going to be a lot about teams you can trust or not trust. And I'm picking some of them that I can't trust early on because they are the better team, but you're going to see me pick against a lot of these teams I don't trust moving forward, just because I don't want to advance them too far when I'm afraid they might lose in the first round and give me a lot of red X's.
Yeah. I mean, like South Carolina, who knows what they're going to do? I mean, Oregon, Lord, what's his face? Ndante or whatever, the big guy hasn't missed a shot against Oregon or against Colorado all year. I think he's 25-25 or something crazy like that. That's just insane. But yeah, you're right. Akron, they didn't even deserve to win that game. If that guy from Kent State doesn't make the biggest blunder of his life so far, my heart broke. That was just. I mean, dang. And what a way to get in. I mean, I'm kind of shocked they were a 14 seed, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're very weak. So I think Creighton has a very good chance to move on out of this little quadrant. And if Tennessee can get going like they do, that'll be fun. But, man, I'm very nervous with the matchups they've got. Unless it's Virginia, because Virginia forgets to score against good teams. So I don't know what they're going to do in that first four game and against Texas, because there's a chance that they get 8 points in the first half. So I don't know what's going to happen there.
Obviously, that should be Indiana State instead of Virginia, but here we are. Yeah. The last thing I want to say about the Kent State thing is it obviously our hearts go out for that kid. College athletics are so tough. Because when you're on TV like that, when you have good moments, the world sees them and you're a hero. When you have bad moments, everyone sees them. Jake, you and I have terrible moments in our lives all the time.
No.
And nobody sees them. You know, nobody.
I screw up my job all the time.
Yeah. And nobody sees it. And that's the tough part about college athletics. You know, once you get to the professional level, for the most part, while you have those moments, the players who make it to that level have been so good for so long, have been celebrated for so long, are making enough money that I'm not saying that you should ridicule them or whatever. I'm just saying it's rare. It comes with the territory. It's a little bit different. When you get to college athletics, there's so many kids playing college athletics who are good, not great. I was one of them playing college. I was not the best athlete. I worked hard. Thankfully, I wasn't on national TV when I don't know, swung at a pitch in the dirt or something like that. And everybody would have laughed at me. Right. So it's gotta be so tough there. Again, our heart goes out for him. It's really a tough setup there. Moving on now, we'll kind of zoom out as we'll kind of finish out these brackets in the East. I've got UConn advancing. That UConn Auburn game would be absolutely fantastic. Should we get it? Auburn over San Diego State. Sideline has that right now at Auburn by about 10. And that's not anything against San Diego State as much as it is Auburn might be the fourth best team in the country. And yet they're somehow a four seed. But UConn against Auburn would be a lot of fun. But I just can't pick against UConn. Sideline's had them as the number one team for quite some time. And they have a really tough bracket, though, because Illinois and Iowa State are really good, two good teams. I would have Iowa State as a two-point favorite over Illinois. Illinois is a two-point favorite over BYU. But here's my strategy on that left side in the East. BYU's been a team all season that has looked fantastic at times and terrible at times. And a lot of times, that's been in the same game. Against a team like Illinois, I just can't trust BYU to play a full 40 minutes. If they do, they have a great chance at winning it. Because when they play a full 40 minutes, they're one of the top 10 teams in the country easily, maybe better than that. But the issue is you just don't know what you're going to get from them. So BYU might win that game, but BYU could fall apart so fast. I just don't want to pick them to go very deep. Iowa State at the bottom half is a team that we've talked all season about how much we've loved them. I think they're really, really good. I just cannot believe that UConn, who's by far the best team in the country, defending national champs, gets such an incredibly tough draw having to play Auburn and then either Illinois or Iowa State. I mean, that is brutal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess committee really doesn't want to see a repeat champion is the only thing I can think of.
I guess.
I mean, even FAU, I mean, they've got three quarters of last year's Final Four in that bracket.
Yeah, FAU, of course, are in that quadrant. Yeah, FAU are beat Arizona this year, so they obviously can knock down a really good team. I mean, everyone's talking about how tough that region is. It blows my mind. All the conference champions, all the talent in that region, and I am picking UConn to get out of it because I think they're the best team in the country, but my goodness.
Yeah, because FAU could easily put it together, win that game. San Diego State could figure it out. I don't think they will and beat Auburn, but the two teams I trust, two of the top five teams I trust the least to do anything are playing each other with BYU and Illinois. So I have no clue. If that's the matchup, no clue what's going to happen there. Cause I don't know. I can't trust either team to do anything. I don't even know if I trust them to walk my dog. It's just crazy. And Iowa State, I think the argument for them to be the last one seed is stronger than giving it to North Carolina.
Wow.
But, that Big 12, they won the Big 12 tournament. North Carolina didn't win the Big 12 tournament. Iowa State went through the Big 12, won, beat Houston twice. They've got two wins over a one seed. I don't think North Carolina's got a single win over a one seed. North Carolina should have lost to Tennessee if Dalton Kinect doesn't get hurt there. Hopefully they get that chip on their shoulder because I would love to see that Iowa State-UConn matchup because that would be incredible.
Iowa State plays some nasty defense, and you saw that in the Big 12 tournament. You had them as a conference tournament winner at big plus odds. On Discord, I tweeted it. All right, I texted everyone on the Discord at halftime. I said, hey, Iowa State's minus 138 at the half, up 7. This is insanely cheap. we've loved this Iowa State team. I would love to pick Auburn to go deep. I would love to pick Auburn to go to the Final Four. I'd love to pick Iowa State to go to the Final Four. I'd love to pick UConn to go to the Final Four. I hate that all three of them are in the same dang region. On the other side, I'm not sure I trust a single team on the other side of the bracket on the South to make it there. It's going to look like a little chalk on this slide. Wait till you see the next slide. It won't look like chalk at all. But, you know, I don't trust Kentucky to go deep. They could easily lose to NC State. Marquette is a team I'm picking to go deeper just because their style of play tends to be more consistent. You talked about the injury to Tyler Kolek, but I've been preaching the whole time that Kolek is more replaceable than a lot of players, not because he's not good. He is insanely good, but because Marquette just has a lot of talent and a lot of depth. And that's the difference between Marquette's situation and it's one player versus two. It's just how much depth that you have. And you saw that with Marquette making a run in the Big East tournament, of course, falling short to UConn, but again, there's only one UConn out there, literally and figuratively. Yeah. But you know, their style, the way they play, the way they try to turn you over, the way they aren't quite as reliant on the three ball and quite as reliant on jump shooters, you know, I kind of trust Marquette a little bit more. I've got to pick Houston because they're so good. But my goodness, we've seen Houston completely fall on their face multiple times this year and just forget how to score. I feel like there's three teams that should make the Final Four in the East, and it's hard to find one I trust in the South. You could not find two different scenarios. Many people will say start picking upsets in the South because of that. I don't think that's a crazy strategy because nothing really would surprise me in the South because I think it's wide open. I think the East is wide open for very different reasons because there's some really good teams there. I think the South is wide open because all those teams have some major flaws. Jake, what's your approach to the South?
I don't know. Toss the coin.
It's probably not a bad idea.
Because, I mean, if Shire gets this Duke team to where you have him going in the Sweet 16 there, that's a win for him. That is huge because not been the best Duke team that they've had. Like
very up and down, very inconsistent, very much looks like a Final Four team one night and looks like a team that's not making it out of the first weekend and the next night.
Yeah. Same with Kentucky. I mean, if they're hot, man, they can absolutely rip apart everybody. But if they're not, we could see Oakland versus NC State there. Like it's yeah. I don't know what to do. Marquette, like, is probably Marquette and Houston are probably the two most consistent teams when they're both fully healthy. But it's like Kelvin Sampson forgets that you have to score to win games. And I mean, you can't do it all on defense. I mean, I know defense wins championships, but you at least got to go 2-0. And sometimes I don't know what they're doing. And then Jamal Shedd is criminally underrated as a player. Yeah. He is
sideline has him as the second best player in the country.
Yes, and he should. He is there. He's not getting the awards and the talk because his numbers aren't flashy. Because he's an incredible defensive player, and he plays in a team that doesn't score a lot of points, and they share the ball very well. Like, yeah. So if that Houston Duke matchup, I think would be a blowout. I think Houston will just if that's the matchup they get. I think Nebraska might put up more of a fight if they're hot.
I think so too. I think Nebraska has a better chance of getting hot, and I think Houston's biggest trouble might be in the second round more than the third, because the third, yeah. I mean, they could play any of those four teams. I wouldn't be surprised. Wisconsin, James Madison, Duke, or Vermont, and I'm just not sure any of them can really hang with Houston, because to beat Houston you need to do something unique, something special, and when do you do that? You can absolutely control Houston. That's what Iowa State did twice, because Iowa State plays incredibly suffocating defense. Nebraska's claim to fame would be the fact that they can get hot from three, and that can be troubling, but I'm just not sure any of the old Vermont teams, and we didn't talk about this earlier, but Vermont's such an interesting team. Doing it more with defense and more twos this year. Vermont's typically been a team that's just been raining from three in years past, and that's not their style this year, which makes them a little bit more consistent, I think, but a little bit less likely to pull an upset deep in the tournament, because that's what you want. You want that being able to hit, you know, get hot from three. So, I think that Nebraska at least does something a little bit more unique that might throw Houston off, versus I'm just not sure anybody that they face in the next round would just be a normal team, and Houston for the most part handles normal teams.
Yeah. And I mean, NC State, Kentucky to me is a very interesting matchup because I can't think Horn, DJ Horn, when he's going, oh boy. Like he can just, I mean, he gets himself in foul trouble and takes himself out of the game. But when he's going and you've got DJ Burns down there, if Kentucky struggles a little bit, I mean, NC State might be able to put the brakes on the game, slow the pace, and absolutely take it to Kentucky. Or if Kentucky's hot, this could be a 90-point game and Kentucky just runs.
I was going to say, you saw NC State have no problem playing in a more up-tempo, higher-scoring game in North Carolina and absolutely controlled that game. I mean, they were in control for most of that game, looked like the better team. And had no problem playing that style. Kentucky goes a little bit faster, a little bit less defense, but NC State seems like a team that like they can kind of do a lot of things and play a lot of different styles and give you problems.
I mean, that run they went through the ACC tournament, right? That was Virginia. I forget who they played in the opening game. Virginia, Duke, and North Carolina. Could you have drawn a harder harder route for them to win the ACC championship?
Like that's crazy. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, so that means they're playing their best ball at the right time. Now, does that continue?
And you threw Virginia in.
No rest helps.
Yeah, you threw Virginia into the middle of that. So it was like just a complete whiplash of styles from Virginia then back to North Carolina. Of course, Duke plays a little bit slower, but no one plays like Virginia does. So it's just crazy style.
What bracket is that? I forget which one that one is. South. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's going to be the most fun one to watch, I think, because it's going to have all the chaos. That's where all your highlights and one shiny moment things are going to come through. You're going to get better games in the East, but the South is going to get a lot more attention.
Yeah. For the record here, we'd have Houston about a 3-point favorite over Duke. We would have Kentucky as a 4.5-point favorite over NC State.
That feels about right.
And then we'd have Marquette as a 2-point favorite over Kentucky if that were to happen, and Houston a 4-point favorite over Marquette. So just some FYIs on what those projected spreads would be. To the bottom half, where we've got a little bit more crazy things happening, I'm going to pick St. Mary's to beat Alabama. I like the St. Mary's team, and I just do not trust Alabama whatsoever. And then I'm going to pick St. Mary's to beat North Carolina. Why is that? Well, I don't want to pick all the ones to go deep, and obviously North Carolina is the weakest of all the ones. The St. Mary's team feels like a team that can make a run. And I know we say that in a lot of years, and they've yet to do it, but people said the same thing about Gonzaga a lot of years. They didn't make a run. They felt like a team was going to make a run. They didn't. They felt like they were going to make a run. They didn't. They felt like they were going to make a run until they did. And then they were able to make a couple of Final Fours. And so I'm going to say maybe this is the time for St. Mary's. Maybe they've got the talent to do it. I think the draw opens up for them. I think if they were up in the UConn bracket, it's a little bit of a different story. Maybe if they were playing a team like Purdue, who's just got a completely different – a player in Zach Edey that they faced no one like that this season is a different setup than playing an Alabama team in the second round that can completely fall apart, the weakest number one North Carolina, and no teams that I trust in the bottom half either – reluctantly picking Arizona to make the Sweet 16. They're a team that can make the Final Four or fall flat on their face. New Mexico could easily beat Baylor. I really have no idea what's going to happen there on the bottom half. I think there's going to be a lot of chaos in the West.
Look, we keep saying there's chaos and all that, but would it not be more crazy for 4-1 seeds to make the Final Four? Because, I mean, that's happened once.
Ever. Yes, it's happened, I think, 4 times that no one seed has made the Final Four, and I think it's only happened once that all 4 have made the Final Four. So more likely that they all lose and they all win, which goes to probability, which is one of the things we often talk about here, that people struggle to understand probability. That doesn't mean you shouldn't pick all 4 number ones to make it. Just because you have an idea and we think they won't make it doesn't mean that you won't get the most points for doing so, because if you don't pick the ones – yeah, if you don't, depending on how many people are in your pool, if you don't pick the number ones, you've got to pick the number two or the number three or the number four. Well, those other seeds are less likely to make it too. So it's tough to say you shouldn't pick the number ones while also saying we know they aren't going to make it. So it's trying to find the balancing that fine line there here. But I just don't think this North Carolina team is that good. I think there's 3 really good teams in college basketball. And I think beyond that, it's anybody's game. And so seems like a good chance to take an upset there. Alabama could beat them as well if they make it. This Alabama team can beat anybody in the country on any given night. There is just, you know, I think Alabama's got a high floor and a low ceiling. I think Arizona has a high floor and a low ceiling. I'm picking Baylor and St. Mary's specifically because they're the more consistent teams, and that I think those teams not sure they have the highest ceiling, but I think they have a higher floor. They're a little bit more consistent. They both slow the game down a little bit more, play a little bit of a measured pace. Baylor doesn't play a ton of defense, whereas St. Mary's is more with defense and offense. But I just think Alabama and Arizona are roller coaster rides that I just don't want any part of. So that's why I'm picking St. Mary's and Baylor. I don't know if that's the most sound strategy, but that's where my head is on that region.
I mean, a lot of fun stuff. I think Alabama St. Mary's kind of going back is just absolutely wild matchup, because to come off the Charleston, who is going to play the exact same style as you, to go right to St. Mary's, is going to slam the brakes. That's very interesting. And I mean, Arizona could struggle a lot against Nevada. Nevada's very, very, very good team. And Arizona can just absolutely forget to play basketball. Baylor, I think, is the team I would trust most out of this whole region, because I know their guards. I know what they're going to get. I know their coach. I know how that works. That it's just wild how crazy this bracket is with teams I don't like. Michigan State being one of them. Like, what are they? Like, I don't think they even know how they want to play. And they've got to struggle against Mississippi State and then go right back to a team who is almost the exact same but better, with Baycott and RJ Davis instead of Tolu Smith and Hubbard. Like, it's, I don't know, there's a lot of fun to be had here.
We would have Baylor as a 4-point underdog to Arizona in that Sweet 16 matchup. We would have North Carolina as a favorite against St. Mary's, so pretty close to a coin toss. And then if St. Mary's were to match up against Baylor, we would have that as a pick'em. I would pick St. Mary's there simply because I think the defense is probably going to be stronger than the offense in that one. But two, you know, a lot of clash of styles there. Like you said, St. Mary's and Alabama with the clash of pace. St. Mary's and Baylor wouldn't be a clash of pace. It would just be a clash of expertise with regards to defense and offense. On the other side over there in the Midwest, I'm going to pick Purdue to make it out. Purdue has felt like a team all season that's trying to pull the Virginia from several years ago, be the number one seed that loses, come back and win the title the next year. I think they absolutely could do it. They kind of struggled a little bit more in conference than I expected. What I think is a weak Big Ten conference. So they didn't quite steamroll the world like Virginia did that season. And they fell short, of course, in the conference tournament. But I still don't know who I would trust to beat them in this region. Again, a lot just has to do with who's in what region, but I think the Midwest is a whole lot weaker. You got some teams like Creighton who have a lot of talent. Tennessee's got a lot of talent, but there's just, you know, not a setup. You know, if Purdue was to play Iowa State, Purdue was to play Auburn, I'd pick either one of those teams to advance over Purdue, because I think Purdue can be beat. Like you said, they're easy to game plan for. I'm just not sure any of these teams can pull it off, and or there's just, I don't trust them. Like we talked about Tennessee, a team that can absolutely make a Final Four run, but I just cannot trust because they just forget to score sometimes. So that's my strategy for the Midwest. With regards to some point spreads here real quick for you, we would have Tennessee and Creighton at basically a pick'em. So that's an interesting note there. We're pretty high on Creighton around these parts. We would have Creighton as a 7.5-point favorite over Oregon in the second round if that were to happen, and an even bigger favorite over South Carolina. Gonzaga, Kansas is an interesting case because right now Kansas has a couple of guys questionable. So that is one where right now we would have Gonzaga favored, but that could change if Kansas is at full strength. So definitely one to pay attention to the injury status again anytime Kansas is involved. Jake, what's your take on the Midwest?
Look, I think the committee had a lot of fun with this one. I already pointed out the whole Rick Barnes and Zakai Ziegler, but like back when Virginia got beat and then they come back and win that tournament, who do they have to go through? And that it was Tennessee and Purdue. Because Tennessee and Purdue played in the Sweet 16, and then Purdue wins on a phantom foul from Carson. That I'll rant about that. But anyway, and then they have the Virginia has the miracle overtime win over Purdue there in the Elite Eight, sends them to the Final Four. So there's a lot of fun little storylines there. But yeah, like this seems to be Purdue's year, because partially a storyline, partially the transfer of Lance Jones really helped, gives him a guy that can create his own shot a little bit more and make big shots. It doesn't kind of shrink under pressure, because Lawyer and Smith are still very young. Everybody forgets they're sophomores. So the pressure, sometimes the lights get a little bright on them. But, man, Gonzaga and Kansas, Purdue has I think they have a very easy walk to the Elite Eight from that standpoint, because Kansas, even at full strength, that's – I don't know that Hunter Dickinson got beat up by Edie all the time in the Big Ten. It's not going to help. Gonzaga, I don't trust Gonzaga at all. I don't think they're that good this year.
Well, I think Gonzaga matches up better against a team that's not going to be quite as physical down low with them. You know, Gonzaga wants to play more of an Alabama, which, of course, they already beat Alabama, but they want to play the Alabamas of the world. They want to play the Kentuckys of the world. They want to play that running gun style, and they don't. You know, St. Mary's kind of pushed him around a little bit there. And now Gonzaga in that championship game, you know, kind of tried to push back a little bit. That's how they hung in there. But in the end, they just kind of got out physical. And obviously with Edie down low, it's that same sort of thing. Like they need someone to push around Edie and be physical with him. And they don't really have that physical presence. You know, St. Mary's would be a much tougher matchup for Purdue, I think, than Gonzaga would be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And speaking of the physical, like, I know Kalkbrenner is very good for Creighton, and he's big, but I'm not sure that he's physical enough. Like, I think he's a very good player. He's very talented. And so I'm not even sure, like, especially the fact that Purdue can throw out TKR out there, who's just as good and has very good footwork, like, down low as most big men. So, like, I think that's a very interesting matchup. I think Baylor Shireman is the difference, and that goes back to the previous game too. You're going to have a very similar matchup with Adu on Kalkbrenner. Can the guards of Creighton and Shireman do enough? Like, was it Ashcroft from the Utah State transfer? Is he going to be good enough to carry them? Because that's the difference in those two games. Like I said, I think Purdue is – the team, it's kind of seems that year, but it's a very interesting matchup there for the bottom half Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, no matter if it's Tennessee, because I would love to see the Tennessee Purdue game again, because that game was officiated terribly, and I would like to see him actually play and see how that goes. But I think Creighton is probably
It's the other thing to talk about with this Midwest region. I mean, the big elephant in the room is, how are you going to officiate Purdue and Zach Edey? Because we've seen different officials handle him differently. He's so tall that he can kind of elbow people in the shoulder, in the chest, in the head, just by existing, because he's so tall.
Turning around.
And depending on how the refs call that is going to be an interesting thing. That's your argument for picking against Purdue, is that in the non-conference, the refs tend to just kind of lay back a little bit, and they're not quite as picky on things like that. In the conference, they tend to know the players and know the setup, and they've seen them, they've officiated them, whatever. And then now when you get to the tournament, you end up with a whole set of referees who've not seen these guys. They don't know them. They call the game a little bit tighter. And in that regard, that could be the big undoing for Purdue, because if you're calling things like that on Edie where he can't be physical, that really makes it tough for him. But then on the flip side, are you calling it where you can push him around? It really goes both ways. It's a fascinating dynamic to talk about with Purdue, because if you push Edie around and they let you, and the idea is, oh, well, he's a big guy, he should be able to take it, and the ref subconsciously will sometimes do that, you have a huge advantage against Purdue. If you call it tight that way, where you touch him and he goes to the line, he's a decent free throw shooter. If you have it where he can bully you a little bit, if you let him get an extra step closer to the basket, how tall he is, he basically just dunks it or puts it in, right? So it's just all about how that's managed. And sometimes it's not managed the same way on both sides. It's treated differently based off if Edie's doing the contact or the other guy's doing the contact. So, I mean, that's the big elephant in the room and the big concern you have to have if you're Purdue, yep. With, of course, the coach, which we'll talk about in the next round. A lot of people are still concerned about the ability of Painter as a coach, and will that catch up to Purdue at some point?
I got several Purdue fans here in Indiana. They call him Matty February because does well there, but nah, it kind of ends.
Not much.
Calling Zach Edey has to be one of the hardest things in the world, because he gets fouled all the time.
All the time.
It's almost every possession, he's got somebody slapping him, hacking him, doing whatever. You cannot blow the whistle every possession.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, what are you going to let him get away with? And it that I, it's, I don't know. That is going to be very difficult. And thank God it's his last year. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
We give referees a tough time. They have a very hard job. So, I mean, we do that with, sometimes we talk about athletes and we give them a hard time. And they're all better athletes than us. So, right. Caveat, of course, even the athletes that are bad are still better than us. And the refs that are bad are still better than us. They have a very tough job. And that's one of the toughest to figure out how to manage him. To the Final Four, we picked UConn last year. I'm going to pick UConn again this year. I'm picking Purdue over Houston reluctantly. I think that one could go either way. Part of me is concerned about the fact that you'll have a full week of prep for Kelvin Sampson, who I think is the smarter coach, to game plan against Edie. I went with Purdue basically because, as you talked about, the game plan against Edie is easy. The execution is hard. And in the end, I trust that if you're just going to do something, throw it down to Edie and either let him go one-on-one, or if he gets doubled, kick it out. I think it's a pretty decent game plan that's worked for the most part for him this year, whereas Houston sometimes doesn't really have an offensive game plan. They sometimes just try to get to the hole, try to get easy shots, and that's not the easiest thing to do with Zach Edie in the middle. So I'm very reluctantly going to advance Purdue, but I've said for many weeks now that UConn's the best team in the country. I said it last year. It was trendy last year. It was unique last year. Now it's just chalk, but I don't see anybody matching up well with UConn. If UConn loses, it's going to be because they just have an off night, and that could absolutely happen. It's not the easiest thing to win six games in a row. Of course, their first one will be a walk in the park. But if anybody can do it, I think it's this UConn team. For the Final Four here, we would have UConn as a pretty massive favorite no matter who they play coming out of that other region. Even if it's North Carolina, if it's any of those teams, would be somewhere between a 7 and 12-point favorite, according to Sideline, to advance to the title game. That's the other reason I'm picking them, because I have the most faith that if they get to the Final Four, they can get to the title game, because the toughest part for them is going to be in their region, not in the semifinals. Purdue I'd have as a 2.5-point underdog to Houston. So the model would actually say Houston should be favored in that game, but there's a lot to dissect with that matchup. Houston has sometimes struggled against some of the top teams, Purdue's one of them, and then I have UConn as a 5.5 to 6-point favorite over Purdue. I love this UConn team. I don't know what else there is to say.
Yeah, I mean, St. Mary's, the offense there is not going to be there to beat UConn. I mean, not saying it's 100% UConn, but, man, it is going to be very, very hard for St. Mary's to play the style they want to play, which happens to also be UConn style.
I was going to say, UConn would be perfectly happy playing that style of game.
Yeah, yeah, and score enough to handle UConn. Like, they would do much better playing either other of the Final Four teams you have listed here. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I think Houston and Purdue really comes down to I hate to say it, the referees. Because mm-hmm. Houston is a very physical, in-your-face pressure defense, which that's how I would attack Purdue, is doing that, making the guards have a hard time finding Edie, and I'd press and do all that. And if they're going to call ticky-tack fouls, Purdue's going to walk away with it because they're a very good free-throw shooting team. Yep.
And Houston's not a very good free-throw shooting team, which could also be the what bites them in the end.
Yes. Yeah, that's where it's going. It's like, if they don't, there's not a lot of free-throws, and they let this kind of play out and said, we're going to let the two teams figure it out. Houston stands a good chance because, like I said, you pressure that ball, and you kind of front Edie kind of thing and make it where they're getting – it's taking them 9, 8, 9, 10 seconds to get up to half court. There's not enough time to let Edie post and then kick it out and repost. Like, it's one or two shots at the most. And, like, that could be the recipe that Houston needs to beat Purdue. And, man, I don't know. That'll be a lot of fun in the game. That's a matchup, a fun matchup to watch.
And like you said, I think St. Mary's would have would be a real interesting matchup against Houston. Mm-hmm. A total in that game probably would be about 95 if those two teams were to play in the title. And then St. Mary's Purdue, like I said, I just think St. Mary's would be a tougher matchup for Purdue, a more interesting one than Gonzaga would happen to be. Houston-Purdue, though, if that matchup does come to fruition, the projected total in that game would probably be in the mid-130s. I have to think it's pretty correlated with the side. If that game goes under, I think Houston's got a great chance of winning it because Houston wants to play a rock fight and win that game 65-55. Whereas if it goes over, you have to think Purdue is, like you said, hitting their threes, hitting their open shots, getting easy buckets from Edie and getting to the free throw line. A lot of stoppages in time, scoring points. And so I think Purdue's pretty correlated with the over there, whereas Houston's pretty correlated with the under in that one. But I just have a hard time thinking anybody can match up with this UConn team. We talked about it last year in the middle of the season, and there's no difference now. Once they kind of got their act together last season after that little weird spell they had, nobody can match up with this UConn team. The depth they have, the talent they have, as long as Klingon stays healthy. That was their one stretch where they struggle a little bit. He's kind of the glue that holds it all together. This team is just insanely talented and deep. Like, who stands a chance to really beat them? I don't know who it would be.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the matchup, I don't even know exactly how you're going about attacking them.
Yeah.
It's very – I mean, the fact that Danny Hurley has them playing this well again is just frustrating because he's – an incredible coach and is loaded with talent, and you're in a basketball-rich environment up there that they love basketball. It's incredible. And, I mean, Klingon, if you look at efficiency numbers, he's the number two guy in the nation right behind Zach Edey.
Yep.
And I think the supporting cast around him is better than
much Purdue's. Better. Yeah.
So that total that you've got there, feels kind of spot on. I would lean a little over that number just because – I think Purdue doesn't play good enough defense to slow UConn down, and Purdue's going to try to push it. Who knows, when you're playing in these football gyms, it's sometimes it's very hard to find the jump shot.
Yes, the projected total, that's a great point that you have there. We'll talk about this as we get on the game-by-game projections. I do not think any of the first-round games are in the football arenas, but when you get to the bigger ones later on, it gets to be a big question mark. The sideline projected total would be 148.5 if it was in a basketball arena. I don't really have a separate football arena projection, but we do know sometimes the air just seems to get sucked out of the building. You know, they're sucked out of the ball. It just seems like nothing can drop for these players. Yeah. In some of these arenas, what you're looking at is different. The backdrop, the angle, everything is just different for the players. And sometimes, you know, you can see some real prolonged scoring droughts. So I took the sideline projection of 148.5 and I dropped it to 147 because knowing it would be in a football stadium is how I came up with that number. Maybe I should have dropped it more. I don't know.
I mean, the crowd energy affects it too, I think. Like, just with the bigger space, it just feels like the energy is not as there as it is in like a basketball arena. And then sometimes that helps players get out of the cold stretches or helps them figure out defense and things like that, with just reading the crowd energy and getting that little extra oomph to get over some of those humps. And with those giant spaces, that's just not there, because a lot of times the fans are a lot farther back than and that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I've had
if I could change anything about this tournament, it would be we play them only in basketball arenas. We don't worry about the football stadiums.
I've been fortunate enough to go to two national championship games, and both of them, of course, in football stadiums. And it is, you're so far away. You know, there's a handful of people that are close, but it's just not that many as opposed to the basketball arena. Like, everyone's right on top. You know, there's so many basketball arenas that hold, you know, between 10 and 15,000 people. Of course, the bigger ones, you know, the NBA ones hold 20, but especially in the ones that hold 10 to 15, which is a majority of your bigger schools are in that ballpark, there's usually not a bad seat in the house. You're still pretty close on top of the action. And so, yeah, you scream and hoot and holler or whatever, and your voice can be heard down there because it's all right there, and the energy you feed off of it. And those football arenas, while you have a handful of people close, it's like everybody else is just so spaced out and spread out. It's just a different environment. So it's a lot of fun to go to one, but it's not quite the same.
Yeah, and I mean, if there was a team to repeat since Florida, this UConn team feels like the right two teams to do it. that stretch, they had that weird stretch in January last year where they just lost, I think, 7 in a row or something.
Whatever stupid. It was bonkers.
Yeah. And then after that, they were like, hey, we're just the best team in basketball and just plowed through. I don't think they're going to have as easy a time in the tournament this year as they did last year.
The road's a lot tougher. Ridiculous. But, last year, they did the same thing that Baylor did a few years ago, right? Where they won like every game by double digits, I think.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I think that's what Baylor did back.
I think they set the record for scoring margin. Yeah, like it was just stupid. And yeah. But this year, a lot tougher route. But yeah, this seems like the right team to do what the Florida teams did, which was similar but different because you had almost the exact same team come back for both the Florida ones. This team, this UConn team, lost a lot last year, and is still just as good, which is incredible.
It really is. All right, that's our show here for this. Again, we'll have shows throughout the week. First four show, a show for all the Wednesday game or Thursday games, show for all the Friday games, and then we'll have a second round show as well. Jake, parting words before we sign off.
I mean, this is the time of year I've been ready for all year. I cannot wait to get this going. Even the first four games are always fun to me. Even the sloppy 16 seeds, but. Just remember, find us on the ESPN Bracket Challenge with picks of the professor. Password is all lowercase professor. Join in. Win a free month of the Dub Club. Either extend your subscription by a month or come figure out what it's all about as we kick off baseball season.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. All right, everyone, best of luck picking your brackets. We'll see y'all later.